Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
If only everybody could just see Chris and Tony at the same time playing an air organ, and then Tony does the whip at the end. I loved it. That was great.
My favorite part of that open is the Family Guy voice.
No, that's the other open, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the Scraby Tank.
Oh my God, what are they doing?
I can't watch Family Guy anymore now without thinking of you.
Well, I mean,
you're just like that guy.
I know.
I'm glad you stopped because I just felt like you were about to throw an alley-oop right there.
Yep, I was. I'm learning.
You stopped yourself.
I'm learning.
Very good.
All right, this is probably going to take me right back, so let's get into it, Thomas.
Number five.
The Arizona Cardinals have the number one overall pick in this year's NFL draft, and they have a big decision to make because they have to decide whether or not they will be drafting quarterback Kyler Murray number one overall just a year after they drafted Josh Rosen in the first round. I read a pretty good theory today saying the Cardinals should draft Kyler Murray and keep Josh Rosen. Start Rosen to begin the year, hope that he plays great so that makes his trade value higher, then trade him to a team in need and have Kyler Murray take over. Or Josh Rosen plays great, you keep him, and you trade your number one pick, Kyler Murray. So, Tony, do you think this is the best scenario for the Cardinals?
Which one? The first one? The first scenario?
Oh, which scenario do you think is the best for the Cardinals?
Okay. I guess the first one.
Hey, don't Google this.
I guess the first one?
So you say that starting Rosen, but keeping Murray and hoping that Josh Rosen plays well.
There are still teams out there that think Josh Rosen was worthy where he got picked and is going to be a good quarterback. If you run him out there again, you run the risk of him playing poorly, considering you haven't really done anything to make the team stronger around him. So you run the risk of his value going down. And yeah. Then you're not getting nearly as much as you probably would get right now if you moved him. So I don't like either of those options.
Chris, what do you think?
I don't like either either.
Wow.
For different reason maybe than Tony has, but I have just never felt that any NFL team can be successful when they've committed to two quarterbacks at the same time.
That's a fact, actually.
And if you committed to Josh Rosen as your starter and you've committed to Kyler Murray as your number one draft choice and starter,
basically,
I think you're really going to have a lot of problems. So I think the best move for Arizona to make is to get as much as they can for Josh Rosen and draft Kyler Murray, or stay with Josh Rosen, draft Bosa or something else, and let somebody else deal with Kyler Murray. But I think having both of them would be a huge mistake and just confuse everything there.
It wouldn't just disturb those two. It would disturb the rest of the team because they would literally have to answer that question week
in,
week out.
And everyone would take sides. You'd have a locker room divided.
Right. One pick from either of them, all of a sudden, oh, there's a quarterback controversy. And we've seen this story throughout the NFL almost every year. There's a quarterback controversy. And it never works out for the team, it seems like. So make your decision now, one way or the other. You draft Kyler Murray, trade Rosen. You don't, decide to keep Rosen, draft somebody else. Do not have both of them on your roster at the same time.
Did you guys, I forgot to say this yesterday, I meant to bring it up, but did you guys see that Sean McVay pranked Cliff Kingsbury?
I did see that, and he had to give up his first
pick. They
were
at dinner, and he...
How did he prank him?
Sean McVay changed his friend's name in his phone to Commissioner Goodell or Roger Goodell. And the friend texted Sean McVay saying, I know you guys are at dinner with Patrick Mahomes right now. You guys are in trouble of tampering. You're going to end up losing your first overall pick. And in Sean McVay's Cliff Kingsbury's face went white, and he was so worried that he was going to lose the first overall pick.
Because if he loses that first pick, you know
he's
what
gone.
Else, you know what else he loses? His job.
Yeah, exactly. But Sean McVay got him pretty good, and Cliff Kingsbury said, "Don't worry, I'm going to get you back, Sean McVay." So
I'm sure that's going to be pretty harsh too. That get back.
Yeah. All right, Thomas.
Number four.
So Andy Green got ejected last night. We talked about it a little bit earlier after Manny Machado, and there was some batter interference, and umpire Mike Everett threw him out too. So I think we're all starting to figure out that call. But during the incident, Twitter found something, and it went with what you know Twitter does. They actually, yeah, they went and looked at it and looked at it and looked at it again, and then zoomed in. But I guess Andy Green accidentally spit in the face of the home plate umpire. Now, when you see the video, it's just him yelling, and there's some spit that comes out of his mouth.
I saw it live.
Yeah. And it gets right into his face. Well, the geniuses on Twitter read Andy Green's lips, and he apologized for spitting on the face mid-ejection. So, of course, fans are going to say what they're going to say, but they're saying that Andy Green should not have apologized. I personally think it's respectful to apologize, but Chris, do you think it was okay for Andy Green to apologize mid-ejection?
Yes, and I want to see more arguments like that from more managers in baseball. It's something that's gone away from the game, and it used to be one of my favorite parts of the game. I think you turn your cap around, you get face-to-face with the umpire.
Kick some dirt.
And some spittle is going to fly.
Spittle.
That's just the way it used to be in the big leagues. And if you're a big league umpire, you better be able to handle it. And if you're a big league manager, you better be able to do it. We've gotten so soft that now all we do is point to the little camera or put the little fake headphones on. Get out there and argue a call. I loved it last night, what Andy Green did. I think it's good. I think it can pump up a team a little bit. And I think he picked a good spot to do it to protect Manny Machado, his star player, which I think is something you ought to always be keeping in mind if you're the skipper.
Tony, what do you think?
What was the question?
Is it okay for Andy Green to apologize to the umpire mid-ejection?
Look, in my competitive side, there's a part of me that wished he would have waited till he said absolutely everything he needed to say and then apologize.
Sorry.
I apologize for spitting on you, by the way. I'm ejected. But, you know, it kind of takes the air out of it from a spectator standpoint, right? Because I saw it on TV as well, and that was the first thing I thought. I was like, did he just mid-apologize right there? I hope he waited to the end to say sorry. But nevertheless, I think Chris brings up a very good point. That ejection was more about protecting Manny than it was the actual call. I'm sure Andy disagreed with the call, but Andy's been accused of quote-unquote being soft as it pertains to umpires and not protecting his guys. I think what he did right there shows the opposite, that he's not going to be soft, that when one of his players is done unjustly, he's going to go out there and protect them. And I think from a team standpoint, those guys look out there, they respect that. They know their manager has their back. So I think it was a good move. I, like Chris, enjoy a good argument here and there. I'd like to see some more dirt kicked on plates and bags to cover it up. We don't get that anymore because of replay. We always are on, let's wait to see after what the replay shows.
The other thing that you brought up earlier was the fact that perhaps Machado was only ejected because of his reputation. Well, if that is indeed the case, then Andy Green has something to go out
Absolutely.
And argue about. Don't be ejecting my guy for something that happened a year ago or 2 years ago. That's crappy umpiring right there, and he's right if that's the case. So he had a lot of good reasons to come out there last night and get kicked out himself.
This is baseball's version of technical fouls, right? Draymond Green could probably get away with far less than maybe, I don't know, LeBron James can, right? Because of his reputation of being a hothead. And that is, these umpires aren't immune to that. They are human beings just like the rest of us. They watch TV. They talk to other umpires. All that stuff factors in whether they want to admit it or not. I think that was a reputation ejection, basically.
It's safe to say that was a really bad night for the umpire last night.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of them for a lot of umpires and a lot of bad nights for a lot of referees. football, basketball, these guys got to get their act together, and that's spoken from a referee.
Guess what? There will be more.
Yeah,
I know.
All right, let's move on.
Number three.
Murray State sophomore guard Ja Morant will declare for the 2019 NBA draft at a news conference he held today. Morant, whose electric performance powered the Racers' first-round win over Marquette in the NCAA tournament, is what brought him into every single household. DraftKings Sportsbook has opened odds on the play on him to be drafted number two overall, and he is the favorite at -190. R.J. Barrett of Duke has the next best odds at +140. But, Tony, would you take Ja Morant second overall in the NBA draft if you're a GM?
Yeah, I don't have a problem taking him second overall at all. He may not have the size that R.J. Barrett has, but he has everything else. I think he's going to be a good – I think his game translates to the NBA very well. I wouldn't have a problem taking him second overall based on what he showed, not just in the tournament, because that's when the national scene got on him, but he was doing this all year. He was putting up these kind of numbers all year. I wouldn't have a problem at all taking him second overall.
Chris?
I think my first thought and instinct would be that I would take him number two overall, but I wouldn't just rush to judgment on it. There's a couple of things about Ja Morant, and I know that there's always that, oh my goodness, what if I pass on the next Michael Jordan? But Michael Jordan was playing at North Carolina in college. I felt like he was playing top-tier Division I competition every day, night in, night out, for 2 years before he was drafted. Ja Morant played in the Ohio Valley League and dominated, and he's spectacular, and he showed he could do it against Marquette for one game, but he didn't show he could do it against Florida State for a second consecutive game. That doesn't mean he's not going to be a fantastic NBA player. I would just make sure that I work him out, do all of my due diligence on this. I would work out R.J. Barrett as well, and a few other guys before I would run to judgment on taking Ja Morant number two.
All right. Great answers.
Thank you. Number two.
You're welcome.
We teased this before the break, but WWE and XFL owner Vince McMahon thinks he knows why the AAF closed up shop before their first season even ended. He thinks they didn't have the right TV contract, which resulted in lower than expected popularity. The AAF started on CBS, which is easy to find for everyone, but after that, the streaming went to CBS Sports Network, TNT, NFL Network, and the streaming Bleacher Report Live app. CBS was actually supposed to get back in the mix late in the season, but the AAF didn't even make it that far, so they're not going to get back in the mix. In a statement by the league, the XFL, they said, "The XFL is well-funded. We have a time before kickoff to execute our business plan, and we will soon announce a national broadcast and cable TV schedule that makes it easy for fans to find our games consistently every weekend when we launch next February," end quote. So, Chris, do you think the TV contract for the AAF was the problem?
It might have been one of the problems, but I think the biggest problem they had was not having the support and the backing and the blessing of the National Football League. I just can't be convinced of anything else. I always feel like if the NFL wants you to be around, then you have a chance to be around. And if they don't want you around or they have some reason for you not to be around, you're going to get bumped out. And I think that's what happened more than anything to the AAF. By the way, those Vince McMahon comments should be saved for next June or July.
When they're done.
Just in case the XFL has to fold up its tent as well. Because the guy's already cocky beyond belief. But now that the AAF has folded, he feels like he is the kingpin. Yes, he's been emboldened now. He is the kingpin of new football leagues. Well, guess what? He's already had one that failed after about 3 weeks, so I'm not convinced this one's going to make it for sure, and he better be careful what he puts out there because it may come back to bite him.
Tony, what do you think?
What's the question?
TV contracts the problem for the AAF? Do you think Vince McMahon makes a point?
I agree with Chris. It's probably was part of the problem, but the thing that we learned yesterday was that they didn't really have their ducks in a row going into the season. From a football standpoint, the product was good, but the business side, we know, wasn't very good. And in the world of sports, the business side almost needs to be as strong as the product, at least at the beginning. The product can kind of take care of itself. So, yeah, I agree with Chris on this. It's part of the problem. By the way, Jay Moran had 28 points in that Florida State loss. Just want to point that out.
Okay. Well, you had a chance to rebuttal.
No, you went first. I went first.
Yeah, so you could have rebuttaled after my.
I had to look that up, though. I didn't know. I thought he had a good game.
How many shots did he take in the Florida State game?
He had 21 shots.
Okay.
So he made like 7?
He made 8.
8 for 21.
Oh, I was close.
Look, he wasn't bad against Florida State, and I'm not saying I wouldn't take him. I'm just saying I want to
double check it
before I take him.
I agree.
Back to Vince McMahon, he actually just recently sold nearly $272 million in WWE stock to fund the XFL. So he's going all in. He's self-funded. He's going all in on this. I have a theory that the NFLPA has a deal with the XFL. That's why they're cool waiting a year. That has to be it, right?
What is the benefit for the NFLPA to have a deal with them, though?
Maybe they've already worked it out with money and all this other stuff.
But I'm saying there's no benefit. The players that they want are NFLPA guys. If they go to the XFL and they get hurt, How is it beneficial for the NFLPA? That's what I don't understand. So,
good point.
It's more beneficial for the league than it is for the NFLPA.
Yeah, good point. Let's get to number one.
Number one.
Did you guys hear this? UCLA basketball looks like they have found their new head coach. Jeff Goodman of Stadium tweeted, quote, UCLA trying to work out a deal with TCU's Jamie Dixon. The source told Stadium, Dixon has a significant buyout, but both sides feel as though it won't stand in the way of a deal, end quote. Tony, is this a good move for UCLA?
I kind of like this move. If I'm not mistaken, Dixon was at Pittsburgh before he went to TCU.
He was.
And did a very good job there.
I believe two Big East titles.
As a matter of fact, I haven't heard from Pittsburgh since he left, as a matter of fact. So he did a tremendous job there. Got TCU to 2 NITs, 1 final, I believe. So I think he's a good hire. I especially like it because he's not a big name. He's not one of the names that we've been hearing circulate around UCLA. And I think that's a good thing for UCLA. I think they need a guy like Dixon. So I'm very interested to see how well he does there. I mean, listen, no matter who it is that comes, you're filling the biggest shoes that have never been filled at UCLA. So, good luck.
Chris, what do you think? Do you think Jamie Dixon's a good move for UCLA?
My first question is this. Ben Howland, where did he coach before UCLA?
USD, right?
No, Ben Howland.
Oh.
The guy that took them to 3 straight Final Fours. Was it West Virginia or was it Pittsburgh?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because I'm thinking that Ben Howland coached at Pitt, just like Jamie Dixon, but I could be wrong about that. So while you look that up, I will say this about Jamie Dixon. I will agree with what Tony's sentiments were. Good luck. Because
That part.
Because as good a coach as I think Jamie Dixon is, and I do think he's very good, and Ben Howland did coach at Pitt.
He did.
So that's pretty interesting that they get another guy from Pitt.
99 to 2003.
That's interesting that they get another guy from Pitt. But my point is that I think the UCLA athletic department, led by Dan Guerrero, has been a debacle and a disaster.
Atrocious
and a bunch of other stuff that you want to throw in that we can play at family hour. But ever since that guy has taken over at UCLA, they've had issues with their football coaches, with their basketball.
When did he take over?
It's been a good decade, even longer, I think. And, you know, he's obviously got some pictures of somebody in the regent's office because he keeps his job fine. But he hasn't done a good job running the show at UCLA. And I think just from the outside looking in, it's always difficult to be successful when those above you are struggling. And I think that Jamie Dixon is going to have trouble if he takes this job at UCLA because I don't think the guys that are above him are very good at what they do.
He's been the athletic director since 2002.
2002, so 15 years. 15, 16 years. Yeah, that doesn't mean he's been good at it.
No.
I mean,
and they've had some good coaches run through UCLA. I mean, even
run through and run out.
Even Lavin did a good job for him for a while there. A
lot of guys have come in, and it seems like they always kind of leave on some bad terms, and there's always some sort of problem. And anyway, that's just my opinion. You know, looking, we're in San Diego. I don't follow UCLA as closely as I used to when I lived in L.A., but it always seems to me that Dan Guerrero's got some sort of controversy surrounding him, and I just think Jamie Dixon be better served to either stay at TCU or go somewhere else.
You know what's interesting is you look under the coaching tree of Ben Allen. You see, you know who's under? Jamie Dixon. He's right under.
So maybe that's why they're going to pick him, because they think he'll be able to do as well as Ben Howland did. All right, that's it for the Big Five. This is the toughest decision we face all week. Would you rather? Oh, yes, it's next. With Gwen and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Once a week, Gwen and Chris face their toughest decisions in the world of sports.
Now you have an adult decision to make.
Would you rather starts now.
Ugh, this is going to be a tough one.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, the way this works, Will Galvez comes on, gives us two options, and Tony and I just try and figure out which one we'd rather do. That's why we call it Would You Rather. I think we should change the name of it to Would You Rather Be Pen Pals. Wouldn't that be better?
What the heck?
You don't think that would be better?
To be fair, I told Scraby that we should have went the other way with that.
You want to know what Will's name was?
It was better than the Padre Pen Pals.
No,
I guarantee
I'm not going to say anything, because anything I say is going to be better for you guys, because you know it will make me angry.
We'll see. I'm just saying. Padre Pen Pals was...
Padre Pen Pals is making its debut at 6:30. I just think we ought to warm the people up with a little Would You Rather Pen Pals, just so they're prepared.
That's I don't even want to do this segment
anymore. Oh, get out of here.
I don't
Come
want
on.
To do it anymore.
Will, God, you're going to go cry in your... Beer over there.
Will, the floor is yours, brother.
All hey, right. Will.
Awesome. Hi, Chris. Hi, Tony. Just like you mentioned earlier, Chris, just some hypotheticals to get you thinking for those of you that are driving home. So let's start this off. In an MLB game as a player, would you rather end the game with an outfield assist throwing a runner out at the plate or throwing out a runner stealing as a catcher? Chris?
Who's first? Oh, Chris.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm left-handed, so I never got to catch ever. I think you got to, you know, you in the game with a play at the plate, and that's fantastic. I think that wins out. You know what the problem is, though, in this day and age with baseball,
you're not going to be able to just come off the field and be happy.
You're going to have to throw the guy out by 30 feet right. In order for them to call him out, because otherwise everybody will question the call and review it, and you'll have to stand out there for 5 minutes and wait, and that's just ruined the whole idea of ending a game with a play like that.
And not to mention, even if it is 30 feet, they're probably still going to, because there could be a chance that when by the time you tagged him, his toe was touching the plate. Who knows? All kinds of crazy stuff. I'm with Chris on this. There's no better feeling, and I played only 2 years under the replay rules. There's no better feeling than ending a play, throwing somebody at home to end the game. I've done it a couple times.
To end the game.
It's basically a walk-off throwout. You know what I'm saying? You're running off the field. You're celebrating with your teammates. I'm going with outfield assist.
But while we're on this subject of throwing from the outfield, because it's one of my favorite things in all of baseball, it's underrated. We saw Hunter Renfro make a throw from the deep left field corner today that almost got Adam Jones,
yes,
who's pretty quick. That was fun to watch today. One thing I love about baseball almost more than anything is when a right fielder has to throw the ball from the wall to third base, and they can do it sometimes.
A la Vlad Guerrero, a la Ichiro.
Andre Dawson. A bunch of guys like the Roberto Clemente going way back. But a throw from right field like that is breathtaking. But what I wanted to ask you is about a throw from center field to home plate. Because the one thing that very few fans understand about how tough that is...
That mound.
...is that the mound is right in the way of your throw, and if you bounce it off the mound, the guy's going to be safe by a mile.
The ball literally just rolls in if it hits the top of the mound.
So you have to make that throw from center field to get a guy at the plate and somehow do it by missing the mound. I don't know how you guys do it.
The throw from center field is tough because you got to get it over that the high part of the mound, and it requires either a lot of arm strength or incredible backspin on your throw in order to get it to carry over that mound. So it's still a tough task. But a lot
is it something you practiced quite a bit? Yeah. I would think so,
because your throw has to come out at a certain height, or it doesn't have a chance. But it can't be too high because your cutoff man needs to be able to cut it and go to a different base. So it's certainly a arc that you have to work at.
I can just speak to one throw that I will never forget that hit a mound. And this was in a college baseball game between the Aztecs and Cal State Fullerton. And this was pre-Tony Gwynn Jr. and post-Tony Gwynn Sr. But the Aztecs were trying to get to the College World Series. They had a tie score, bottom of the ninth. The Aztecs have the winning run coming around third to score. The throw from the right fielder by Fullerton was offline and hit the mound right to the catcher, and he tagged the Aztec guy out. Fullerton won in extra innings and went on to win the World Series. That has made me mad now for 25 years.
That is very something that can only happen to San Diego State.
Only happened to the Aztecs.
Really fast, before we go to the next question, Chris, as you just said, the throw from right field to third base, one of the craziest highlights I ever saw was Jose Guillen. I believe it was 1998. He was on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yep, they were playing the Rockies. And that throw, that was absolutely insane. So
one of the best I've ever seen.
Yep.
Okay, let's go to the next one. With Andy Green getting tossed last night, that you guys were mentioning earlier on the show, and the use of instant replay, which has kind of hindered this situation that I'm about to explain, this got me thinking, if you could go back in time for one game to see both of these coaches in their prime, so you have to choose one, would you rather see Bobby Cox or Earl Weaver explode on an umpire for one game?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. Earl Weaver. Bobby, you know, he went out and argued a lot, got ejected, I think, a lot, but he didn't really have a whole lot of, like, antics out there. Earl Weaver, on the other hand.
Did he forfeit a game, or I don't, like...
This Earl Weaver, I mean, he had full-on argument conversations with umpires. I never got a chance to watch him manage in an actual game, but the highlights are just amazing. So I'm going with Earl Weaver. He might be one of the best arguing managers of all time.
I think he is the best arguing manager of all time. There's some very good ones. Lou Piniella was very good.
Really good.
Billy Martin was a great arguing manager. Bobby Cox was good, but he wasn't the best guy in his own organization.
No,
the AA manager for the Braves who went rogue and was
through the bomb. He army crawled
behind the mound and threw a bomb. I'll never forget that video. But Bobby Cox, I think, got the record because he just got thrown out the most.
Right.
Earl Weaver was crazy. He was absolutely bananas. He really, truly thought the umpires were out there to cost his team the game. He thought that's the only reason umpires existed, were to cost the Orioles the game. So he would go yell that stuff, and some of those arguments are just, you've got to look them up on YouTube. They are priceless.
The most amazing thing about those arguments is that the umpires entertained it the whole time.
Yes, they would just yell back at him.
If that happened now, oh my gosh, there'd be fines, there'd be all kinds of stuff going on now. But the fact that those umpires actually entertained it, I found to be amazing.
That's why baseball was, that's one of the things that made baseball in the 70s far better than it is now, and that's those arguments. By the way, the news today that Bobby Cox,
that's why I brought it up,
is in the hospital. I haven't heard anything further on this, but the Braves manager, Brian Snitker, said that Cox's family was very concerned and did not have any details about his condition. I haven't heard anything more, but I hope the best for a guy like Bobby Cox, who I rooted against an awful lot in my life as the Atlanta Braves manager, but was one of the better guys in the history of the game. So I hope he's okay.
Yep, sending good vibes and prayers his way. And with that, we are going to wrap up Would You Rather.
That's a wrap for Would You Rather on 97.3 The Fan.
I wish that I could do an impression of my favorite Earl Weaver argument, but I can't say any of the words that he said. And it's the funniest thing you've probably ever seen. If you ever call it up on YouTube,
I'm looking at it right now.
Like a famous, just say YouTube and do Earl Weaver argument. You'll be glad you did out there. It is fun, but keep the kids out of the room.
Yeah, there's lots of profanity.
Lots of profanity, but it was amazing.
Yeah, let's step away and take a break. When we come back, there's a lot of fallout from the AAF suspending those operations, including a lot of people looking for jobs, health insurance, and their homes.
A way home.
We'll tell you what's going on with the AAF employees next. But first, let's take a look with traffic with Susie D.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, Padres fans, now's your time to ask the experts.
I was hoping maybe you can bring a little insight into it.
Gwynn and Chris answer all your questions about the Padres.
Hurt the pelota big time.
Padres Pen Pal starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
First off, I'm highly, highly offended that Chris just moved himself to the end of the chair like he's on the edge of his seat.
I'm excited. How can you be offended by that? I'm excited about this debut.
Yeah, and I actually, if you want to ask the guys a question, you can email us, you can tweet us, you can do all that stuff, but these are from this group, and I went and told these people that their questions are going to be asked. So, first question up in Padres Pen Pals is from Ivan Parma, and he wants to ask you guys, are we an actual playoff contender by adding Keuchel or any other veteran ace? Tony, you're up first.
Oh, wow. Are we a playoff team?
Are we an actual playoff contender by adding Keuchel or any other veteran ace?
Are we a playoff contender? I would say, yeah, we are. You add a guy like Keuchel, that stabilizes the front end of your rotation, right? You get a guy that, if healthy, can get you a lot of innings, quality innings, too. So I would say that, yes, a contender for the playoffs. Yes, doesn't mean that we're actually a playoff team, though.
Chris?
Yeah, I'd agree with that, but I think that the Padres are, even with a Keuchel, would probably come up a little short. 66 wins up to 90 in one season is really asking a lot. We looked it up. Remember last week, the 97 team.
It was the Braves, I believe it was.
To 98 was a plus 21.
You're talking
about
the Padres.
To the World Series, the Padres. So you can do it, but it's really, really hard to do. And that team added Kevin Brown and all kinds of people. Obviously, this team's added Machado and Tatis and I think a big-time solid pitching guy would be very helpful. I don't think the Padres think Keuchel's that guy, though. I just get that feeling.
Not for that price, they don't think
certainly
he's that
not
guy.
For that price, but even just the fact he's over 30, I don't think they're that interested in him. I think they'd rather work a trade out with Cleveland or something like that, which could still happen.
Not to mention the Padres on that 98 team, alongside Kevin Brown, had a guy like Andy Ashby, Sterling Hitch. They had some veterans that knew how to pitch.
They had depth.
They had depth, too. Right. Joey Hamilton, by the time playoffs came out around, he was coming out of the bullpen, who was one of their starters during the season.
Right.
So,
the 1990-91 Braves, the 91 Braves collected 94 wins, a 29-game improvement from the previous season.
That's the record, right?
That's the record. Yeah.
And they lost the World Series to the Twins, but they were right there in a seventh game.
All right, thank you, Ivan, for the question. We're going on now to Teague. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Teague Karp. They asked, Chris, you're up first, how will our rotation fare once teams have film on them at the major league level?
Probably just as inconsistent as they've already fared this season. I think that we've obviously had some pretty good dominant performances. I like to believe that Lucchesi back-to-back, and his first start, and again today, is a good sign that maybe he's ready to move ahead and take that mantle as the ace of this staff. I think you have to kind of give that mantle to somebody. But there's going to be nights. I mean, with a young staff, with nobody with more than 2 years' experience and two guys making their major league debuts, yeah, once they get a little more footage of you, they're going to know more. But also, I think these pitchers are going to learn more about the hitters as it goes along, too. So it's not a one-way street.
Right. Tony, how will the rotation fare once teams have film of them?
I think they'll be all right, and that's the short answer. It's layered, though, right? Because in this league, you do your thing, hitters adjust. Now you got to be able to make that next adjustment, and that is usually the hard part for guys with no experience, guys, rookies, basically, especially on the mound. It's hard to make that adjustment because you don't know exactly what that adjustment needs to be because you don't have the experience. So I think they'll be okay. I imagine the young guys that they have up right now will fare just like Lucchesi and Lauer did last year. We saw that kind of up and down all season. Second half of the season, we saw a bit better pitching from those guys. And I would expect to see the same thing from the young guys that are in this rotation. I think Lauer and Lucchesi are maybe not exempt, maybe not Lauer, but Lucchesi is probably exempt from this because he was up for the majority of last year and really made those adjustments. He's gone through that period already. So other than him, I believe everybody else is going to go through it.
Teague also says Manny Machado makes manning the hot corner look easy.
He does. There's no doubt about that.
Yep. You know, the one thing about the young pitchers, it's almost impossible right now to imagine Chris Paddock ever getting hit hard.
I know.
Because he's just been so tremendous. But I'm pretty sure there's going to be a game or two or five that he does get hit hard because it happens even to Jacob DeGroms of the world. So
I do believe
it's got to happen to these
guys.
He's
the wild card, though. He could be the guy that goes a lot longer without having to make an adjustment because of his stuff. But he also is going to be on a pitch limit or an innings limit at some point. So they're ain't going to get so much out of him during the course of this season.
Speaking of Jacob DeGrom, today he is the fifth pitcher since the mound was lowered in 1969 to strike out 14 batters and hit a home run in a game.
He also has a crazy consecutive quality starts record going right now.
26 straight quality start, tied with Bob Gibson in 67-68 as the longest streak.
Let me tell you, you start being mentioned in the same breath as Bob Gibson.
You're not
of the rest of the pitching mold in this era.
All right, our next pen pal. That's how I'm going to do this from now on. Our next pen pal is my buddy from high school, Matt Whitmore. He's an LCC guy. He wrote in.
Is that how he got in? Because he's your buddy from high school?
Yeah, I slipped him to the third.
Yes, you got to know somebody.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I said all you're going to get is third place. Okay, Matt. But he asked, with the early success of Tatis and him probably being the fastest guy in the team, do you see him at some point this season batting leadoff? If so, when?
Tatis Jr.?
Yes.
No. I don't see it. I don't see why. Now, listen, I say that with a catch. If he's going really well and they're struggling at the leadoff spot, I don't see Andy Green hesitating at all to put him there. But if we're just talking about, you know, a regular rookie season, I don't think there's a need to put him up there. Let him continue to just be a rookie in the six hole right now and do his thing there. He's more than capable of doing it, but I don't see the reason to do it right now. If there's a need, I don't think Andy Green hesitates to put him up there.
Chris?
I think you hesitate as long as you can, though,
right,
to put him up there because, to me, the leadoff hitter has to have a superior knowledge of the strike zone. Superior. Like, never swing at a ball, always hit strikes. And I think it takes years sometimes to develop that, to be a great leadoff hitter. I don't think you see a lot of rookie leadoff hitters, do you? I mean,
no.
Other than maybe Ichiro, who wasn't 100% a rookie.
Right.
It just takes a long time to learn exactly how to work counts and take pitches and lay off close pitches. So I would say no. I would say let's try to keep him out of that leadoff spot unless it's the last, you know, bastion of hope.
Over to our next pen pal. I know I'm going to mispronounce this name. Maggior CJ Good is the name. But they ask, and Chris, you're up first, how much bad luck can Franmil Reyes run into.
Oh, my gosh. Well, more today.
Apparently a lot.
God. He's going to hit about six home runs off somebody pretty soon to make him pay for all this. There's a reason that he's still batting cleanup and his average is 0.77 because he's hitting the ball almost on the line every single time he's up. So the odds have to work in his favor eventually. I mean, I love the way the big guy's hurting the pelota. It's just got to drop in somewhere.
Tony, what do you think?
You know, it's funny. You said it always evens out. It doesn't. It never.
It doesn't.
It never evens out, by the way. He's never going to get any of those hard-hit balls back.
He's going to get a couple bloopers will drop in.
Not as many as they need to do to make up for it. But that being said, today was the first day I worried about Franmil.
We were sitting next to each other. Tony said something to me.
It was right after he was grounded into a double play.
Yeah.
He had the helmet spike, and it went everywhere. And you haven't seen Franmil really have that. So for that reason, I'm okay with it, because the one thing you don't want to do is keep that all inside, and you just get it out right now. Get that explosion out. The question was, how much bad luck can he run into? Unfortunately, in this game, it can continue to happen for a lot longer. I hope that that's not the case, because when you see a guy swinging a bat like he has and getting no results for it, it can be frustrating as a hitter. But he's pretty even keeled. He had his one little blow up there, and it was probably needed. Probably hadn't said anything about any of the lineups, the lineouts prior to that at bat.
And he even went and picked up his
he
own
did.
Stuff.
He did, and that's respectful to your first base coach. If you spike your helmet and it goes away from your coach, don't expect him to pick it up. I played with many a coach, Davey Lopes being one. If you spiked your helmet and threw your batting gloves, that stuff would have sat out there the entire inning until you picked it up or the bat boy picked it up. Don't embarrass your first base coach.
He had so much stuff strewn over the field. It was the wristband. It was the batting glove. It was the leg protector. All right.
He deserved to have that experience.
Yeah, he did. Our last pen pal for the day is Jose R., and he's asking, is Robert Stock chasing velocity more than outs, and will that get him sent down, Tony?
I don't know if he is or isn't. But if he is, that is a quick way to get sent down. Ultimately, what Darren Bosley and Andy Green want to see from him is him be able to locate the ball he needs to, which is the fastball, get ahead in the count, and keep guys off the base pass. I mean, that's really his job. The 105 is a luxury. Or the 100, whatever he's trying to reach is a luxury. But he's going to need to be able to command the baseball ultimately. He throws hard enough. I mean, even when he's not reaching 100, he's still throwing 97, 98, which is plenty hard enough. But he's got to be able to locate it. If he's walking guys, it kind of makes the velocity obsolete. So to answer that question, if he is, yes, that is a quick way to get sent down.
So, Chris, when you were pitching and you were chasing 105, did that get you sent down?
I did chase 105, and if you put two of my pitches together and added them together, I would get to 105.
But what do you think about Robert Stock, more importantly?
Well, I think everything Tony said. I really, there's not a whole lot to add. He hit it right on the nail. I mean, you got to get guys out no matter how hard you're throwing. And I think Robert Stock even knows that, but he just wants to go about it in his way, which is to, you know, dial it up as hard as he can. But if he's not getting guys out, he's not going to be pitching for the Padres for long. So that's an easy answer.
All right, that's it. Good stuff, guys.
Hold on, let me play the close really quick.
The Padres pen pals are now closed.
Is that Will doing that?
I was like, wait a second, I didn't give you guys a close. What is coming here?
Will, attaboy, Will.
Very good, Will.
But thank you to Jose R., thank you to Maggie R., CJ Good, Matt Whitmore, Teague Carp, and also Ivan Parma. If you guys want to ask us questions, just reach out to us. We'll be doing this once a week.
All right. We may not call it the same thing next week, but we're going to do it next week. Did you see this retweet from Kevin Acey / through Bryce Miller of the Union Tribune? I just happened to be flipping through Twitter here. Apparently, a Diamondbacks, and it doesn't name the Diamondbacks TV analyst.
Yeah, I heard this already.
Oh, okay. A Diamondbacks TV analyst called Manny Machado's play Tuesday
Bush
night,
League.
Bush League.
I played it for Scraby during the game.
Okay.
And I was trying to make out the voice. And I don't think it was Bob Brantley. I don't think it was him.
Okay. I don't know who it was.
I don't know who it was, but they were certainly stirring the pot.
The Diamondbacks as an organization stir the pot. And I'm not blaming their announcers. I'm really not. Although I've never liked Bob Brenly ever since the Curt Schilling perfect game blow up.
Yeah, there's been a lot of saltiness
about that. When Ben Davis laid that bunt down. But anyway, the Diamondbacks, it seems like they get in more fights with the Dodgers than anyone. They get in more fights with the Padres than anybody. They get in more fights with the Rockies. They get in more fights with the Giants than anybody. And yet the Diamondbacks always feel like it's the other team's fault.
Right.
I just think that's kind of comical because they're the one constant in all of this.
He literally said it was Bush League as the replay was playing, and you see Manny put his bat down, and the bat is a good 5 feet from the catcher, maybe 3 feet.
Yeah.
And it was like he just set the bat down, and he ran. Like, what is he supposed to do? Walk around him and say, oh, can we put this bat over here? Now I'm going to go run the bases. Like, what is that?
I think, you know, you got to be careful as an analyst.
Yes.
When you're saying
stuff
like that.
You should be careful.
I think when you're saying stuff like that, I know there's a home broadcast, but in this day and age, I mean, everybody's going to hear everything you say. And if you're going to be critical of guys, you better be willing to stand there and take the heat. Because Manny Machado, I don't know what kind of guy he is, but he has every right to confront this guy.
Absolutely.
And say, hey, what's your beef, man? And whoever it was that said that may have to contend with something like that. I'm always very careful trying to broadcast, even for the visiting teams, because yes. I know that their fans are watching too.
Families are listening.
And I've always felt that you're better off as a broadcaster uplifting the other team than you are putting down the other team. I think it makes for a better broadcast. Anyway, Diamondbacks, that particular analyst didn't think so. All right. What's the score of the Aztec game, Kirk Kenny? Are they on their way to another win? Partial score of five. Kirk Kenny's a funny, funny man. He's always been a funny man. All right. Thank you, Matt Scraby.
Oh, you're welcome.
Outstanding job. Great job on the new Pen Pal segment.
Yes!
Thomas Andrews, Will Galvez, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ella. We're back tomorrow, 3 o'clock, 4 full hours on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.